Today we're going to go through spring semester contemporary halacha. We're not going to do all of the shiurim today. We'll try to go through hopefully as many as we can in the time that allots us, that we are allotted. I'll try to stop on time so that anyway, we're going to need the second meeting, so let's do whatever we can. So we're going to start with Rabbi Reese's shiur on Beis Din and Arkaos. The Torah says, Eila mishpatim asher tasimuth nehem, that Chazal darshin lifnehem v'lo lifnei. Well, there are two drashas. One is v'lo lifnei ha'akum, you're not allowed to go to Betei Din Shel Goyim, Arkaos, and also v'lo lifnei hadyotos. That we'll talk about in a moment. What's the reason why? What's the reason for that? What's the time of the Kra? Why it's prohibited to go to a secular court? Here we have two reasons. One is that the poskim give. One is that you're miyaker shem alilim. By going to secular court, you're enhancing their stature. And on the other hand, there's also a negative aspect that you're being mechal shem Hashem. You're mechal the Torah, in that you are as if you're saying Torah does not have a response for my court case, so I have to turn elsewhere. Those are two different things, and there are going to be nafkaminas between them, which we're not going to go into. The yesod of the power of a Beis Din and the authority of a Beis Din is from the Torah, which is talking about Mismachim, talking about Mumchim, and Mismachim from Moshe Rabbeinu, and that relates to the second drasha that we mentioned, Eil HaMishpatim Asher Tassim Lefneihem, Lefneihem V'lo Lefnei Hadyotos. So to go to a court where the people are not Mumchim ought to be a violation of an Isser, because they're not worthy of paskening. Nevertheless, the Gemara in Gittin, as explained, the Gemara Gittin says that the people outside of Eretz Yisrael had shlichus sayu from the mumchim in Eretz Yisrael, because you can only have smicha in Eretz Yisrael. And Tosus adds that not only does shlichus sayu work location geographically, it also works chronologically, and therefore shlichus sayu from the time of mumchim of smuchim will apply even nowadays, and therefore our batei din work with the authority of the shlichus sayu of those mumchim. In terms of these two different isurim of lifnei arkos and lifnei hadyotos, there is a nafkamina between them, a tremendous nafkamina between them. That is, that Ramban distinguishes that when it comes to the isur of arkos, lifnei ha'akum, there mechila will not help. Meaning, if both parties agree to go to a secular court, their agreement one with another does not help, does not give them a heter. Masha Enkin, if two people are willing to bind themselves to an arbitration of two hadyotos, there, the two people's willingness to agree and to come together from the hadyotos, their mechila will be a mechila, and they can go to a non-expert arbitration if they so desire. Let's say both agree to go to Beis Din. Wonderful people, they both agree to go to Beis Din. However, they want the Beis Din to work within the parameters of secular law. This, presumably, is a big machlokas between the Sma and the Taz. And one area where it rears its head is in the case of women who, in regard to their prenuptial agreements, are concerned about submitting themselves, about signing a document that will commit themselves to go to Beis Din, even though, of course, if there is an argument between a man and a woman, financially they do have to go to Beis Din. But nevertheless, they might be concerned because of their they think that the men will be more favored in court and in Beis Din in terms of dividing up assets. So Reb Zalman Chemia came up with a solution that so the question is, can she sign and say, I will submit myself to go to Beis Din as long as they rule with secular law? So here, that's going to be a big machlokas, but Rizal Menachem has suggested that the way to do it is by rephrasing the prenup terminology by saying, you're not saying, I'm going to go to Beis Din as long as they adjudicate my case according to New York State law, but rather say, I will go to Beis Din and we agree that they will adjudicate the case based on the principles of equitable distribution or whatever other principles of legal principles that might actually be the same ones employed by the state of New York, but you're not committing yourself, you're not binding yourself by the secular law, you're binding yourself to a certain principle, which happens in this specific area to coincide with that secular law. Let's talk about second Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bidvaro. Let's talk for a few minutes. This is the second part. One of the things that I'm going to try to do with these shiurim is not just review what was said, but also try to break the shiurim down into pieces. So you know, this is one unit, this is another unit. In other words, this could be one question, this could be another question. Okay, let's talk about Mishpat Ivri now. Why is this so significant? Because we have, at this point, the majority of the Jewish people are bound by this Mishpat Ivri, which is, unfortunately, seen, as we'll see soon, going to be a very significant problem that might be a violation of Torah law. So let's start the discussion of Mishpat Ivri by, let's say you have two people who want to work within a particular system of law. For example, within our industry, we both are in it. We have a diamond issue, an architect, you know, a building, a contracting issue, an issue in, you know, fashion. I'm a designer. You're a retailer. Another person, you know, is a fabric wholesaler. We have machlokas, so we want to work within that system. So there, it is permitted to bind yourself to an arbitration within that localized industry. However, if it's an across the board situation that I'm going to be bound by an across-the-board system of law, for example, like a country's court of law, says the Chazon Ish, that would be, of course, Aser, and therefore the Chazon Ish, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, Rav Herza, the Rav Rashi, the Rav Avadia says it would be problematic. It's obviously to be subject to the courts of law. The Israeli courts of law would be an Iser, and it would be therefore be an Iser even to be a judge in Mishpat Ivri. Now, where does this issue begin? And how will there be some who might argue that it will be okay? It starts with the Shas Tshuva Sarashba, who has the beginning seems to be so the end. It's talking about a case where, of course, we know the in Hilchos Yerusha, when a woman dies, her wealth goes to her husband. Apparently, the secular law that the Rashba was dealing with was that the wealth would go to her father. So the Rashba said that we could assume that the marriage was done with the assumption of how people do it in the country, and sounds like you could, if deals or contracts are taking place within the context of a certain assumption of what's done in the country, we'd follow that country. Sounds like Mishpat Ivri would be okay. On the other hand, he concludes his tshuva by saying, but if you do it, if you're following the law of the land because you want to be like everybody else, it's a terrible, terrible thing that undermines the Torah, which sounds like if you do something because that's the law of the country, it's bad. So we have a seeming two opposite, you know, mashma'uyos of the Rashba. So we have, there are a number of answers to the stira, and each of them would end up being problematic as far as Mishpat Ivri is concerned. Beis Yosef distinguishes in the two parts of the Rashba whether you're going to court or you're going to Beis Din. But the Beis Din is choosing to follow secular court. So you're not allowed to go to court. But you're allowed to go to Beis Din, says the Beis Yosef's understanding of the Rashba, if the Beis Din themselves chooses on their own volition to follow secular law. Well, that doesn't happen in Mishpat Ivri. The Beis Din isn't deciding to follow the secular law. The Beis Din is bound by that secular law. So that answer, the Beis Yosef of the Rashba, to the contradiction of the Rashba, will be a problem. The second explanation of the contradiction is that when the Rashba said it's okay to follow general assumptions, is that you, regarding a certain legal perspective, like we talked about before, you want to follow equitable distribution or other such legal principle, that will be okay. But if your interest is just to follow the law because that's the law, not looking at the perspective, but just to follow it because that's the secular law, that would be a problem. In which case, again, since Mishpat Ivri is a wide-ranging system, it will be problematic. Zalman Nechemia's answer for the contradiction is that there's a distinction between whether it's two parties accepting upon themselves a certain set of laws as opposed to a community accepting upon themselves a certain set of laws. In other words, if the whole community accept upon themselves a secular law, that will be a problem. If two parties decide that they want to abide by these principles, there the Rashba might be matir. Either way, Mishpat Ivri, which is a communal national set of laws, it will be a problem. What is the argument if that's the case? To yes, permit Mishpat Ivri? The argument is based on a different Rashba. Rashba talks about how do we adjudicate court cases in a city where we don't have a Beis Din. So the Rashba, based on the Gemara, talks about Dayanim Shebesuria, who were not necessarily learned Talmidei Chachamim Dayanim, but they were the respectable people, the intelligent people of the town, the doctor, the engineer, the lawyer of the town. And we appoint them to be Dayanim Shebesuria to do the best that they can with their own seichel and nothing more. They just use their own common sense, not necessarily kofef to any secular law. There, when they make those decisions, it's permitted to be bound by that Dayanim Shebesuria. And on that Gemara of Dayanim Shebesuria, the Meiri adds that when they adjudicate based on their common sense, they're allowed to consult the law books of the land. So some people take that Meiri. To rely on a Meiri, la halacha in general, I think I heard from Rabbi Bleich that Rav Soloveitchik used to say, the Meiri is a mere something or other. In other words, we don't have a tradition of the Meiri for the Masorah of halacha for the past six, seven, 800 years. We don't have a Masorah of the Meiri. The Meiri was just discovered very recently, and therefore Soloveitchik didn't like relying on the Meiri. Of course, the Meiri always has a lot of unusual, out-of-the-box chidushim. But even so, even if the Meiri says you can consult the law books, which would perhaps mean that, so I could go to Mishpat Ivri, because they're just like, you could have these Dayan Shabasuri who work with a secular law system. Wait a second. That Meiri only said that they're making it with their seichel, and they're permitted, if they would like to consult their law books, but not that Dayanim Shebesuria can just follow a secular law. That's one rejection of the heter. And secondly, when is there a heter of Dayanim Shebesuria? Only when there are no Dayanim around. In Eretz Yisrael, there are Baruch Hashem plenty of Dayanim around. Some of us know some Dayanim, and therefore there will not be a heter of. We do not have a valid heter of Mishpat Ivri. That's out of that section. How do we arrange for people to yes go to court? What are the situations when a person can yes go to court? Usually the procedure is like this. I call somebody to Beis Din, I subpoena them to Beis Din. They refuse to go to Beis Din. So if the Beis Din sees that my opponent refuses to come, the Beis Din will issue a heter to me to take the person to the courts of law. That's usually how it works. Where do we see the heter bichlal? Isn't it an issa d'oraisa? Could Beis Din also like be matir agunas, and could Beis Din also like be matir eshes ishes if they want? Well, maybe. But how could Beis Din just be matir arkos, in issa d'oraisa? So this is based on two different gemaras. The gemara in Mishnah Gittin says that there are certain cases when if the Beis Din says that a man is obligated to give a get, then the arkos could beat him up and say, I say mashi Yisrael omrim lacha. So you see one area that we recognize the authority of the, and it's not considered get me'usa. So we allow the courts to do that. Another Gemara, Bava Kama, which is a general, it's not specifically, doesn't say the word Beis Din, but it says if you call your friend and he doesn't respond to you, throw him against the wall. And the Rosh understands that Gemara, that means if you bring somebody to court and he doesn't respond, he doesn't appear in court, throw him against the wall, meaning bring him to Beis Din. So there we have, to clarify one point, let's say I want to take somebody to Beis Din, and he refuses to appear in Beis Din, does that mean I could just, they'll give me a heter to go straight away? Or did the Beis Din first have to hear at least my side, other than my opponent isn't coming, at least to hear my side and see if I have a valid claim according to halachic principles, at which case, if they decide that I do have a good claim, then they'll give me the heter. It happens to be, even though the nesivus is machmir, that Beis Din first has to ascertain that the person is owed money, the minhag olam is not like that, and whenever my opponent does not appear to Beis Din will give me a heter. What's the logic? Again, so we see there's a Gemara that says it is mutter in certain circumstances, after I get a heter from Beis Din to go. What's the logic for that? The Chasam Sofer explains the logic that the whole Isra, as we started this shir is that I'm undermining halacha. But if Beis Din is overseeing and authorizing me, I'm not undermining anything, and that will be the heter. The whole problem was I might be miyakah shem elilim. I'm going to the courts to be miyakah them. No, you're not. You go to the Beis Din. Didn't work, so there's a backup, but that's no longer being miyakir shem elilim. Another situation where you are permitted to go to court is once the Beis Din ruled, chayav, you have to pay, and it's just a question of enforcing the psak that the Beis Din already issued, then the court, you can take it to court for the courts to enforce, because that's not something Beis Din has the ability to do. Okay, so that will be the discussion for the first year of Erkos. The next year that we'll talk about is Halachas of Mezuzah by Rabbi Simon. So the fundamental principle that we'll start with is what is the size of a room that needs a mezuzah? Gemara in Sukkah tells us any room that is 4 amos by 4 amos, which Ramosha says the Maisa is 7 foot 3 inches by 7 foot 3 inches. And here we have to try to figure out, is that you have to have a minimum of 4 amos one way and a minimum of 4 amos in the perpendicular direction, or is it you just need a minimum, a room that has a minimum of 16 square amos, even if it will be 8 by 2. So this, bepashtus, is a machlokas rishonim. The Rambam says, as long as you have 16 square amos, you are obligated to have a mezuzah. So if you have 8 by 2, a hallway, a long hallway that's 8 amos long, 2 amos wide, you have to have a mezuzah there. The Rosh, however, says, no, a room is only chayev if there is a minimum of 4 amos in one direction and 4 amos in the other direction. There's a discussion of if the Rambam really means that that 8 by 2 would be chayev. The Taz holds that really no one holds that 8 by 2 is chayev, just the Rambam is saying something different, which we don't have to go into now. Lamaisa, it seems to be a machlokas, and according to this kula, certainly of the Taz, who understands that even the Rambam doesn't require 8 by 2, a hallway, which is, again, even if it's long, but it's narrow, will not need a mezuzah. That's the first point, just in terms of introduction. The second point is the Chamudi Daniel. The Chamudi Daniel says, let's first give the lamdas of the Chamudi Daniel, then the possible lamdas, and then we'll see the applications. Why did the Gemara say, again, this is only the Chamudi Daniel's take on things, not the general perspective. Why did the Gemara say that you need 4 amos by 4 amos? Because one could say other reasons, but perhaps because that's the minimum shiur of hishtamshus. You need to be able to function normally. So a room that you function normally, it has to have a certain size for you to move around and to be able to function there. But, says the Chamudei Daniel, if there is a room that it's not a base dira, it's a room that you use, but it's like a base sha'ar, a gina, a mirpeset, where you could use it for its purpose, even if it's smaller, then it would be obligated in having like an anteroom, which you very much is part of your house and you use it and it serves its role as an anteroom. Well, it's an anteroom even though it's less than 4 by 4. That would need a mezuzah according to the Chamudei Daniel, even if it's less than dalet al dalet. According to this, before the Chamudei Daniel, many people, especially in the Heights, have an anteroom to the front of their apartment. You walk into their apartment, the front door leads you to a small anteroom that is less than 4 by 4, which should theoretically not need a mezuzah at all. Your front door should not need a mezuzah at all. But according to this Chamudei Daniel, since that anteroom does its purpose even less than 4 by 4, that's just how the anterooms are built and why they're built, then it would, according to this Chamudei Daniel, need a mezuzah. In which case, the anteroom would get its own mezuzah, and the room in the Heights, usually the dining room, that it leads to, would also get its own mezuzah. Do we paskin like this, Chumra of the Chamudei Daniel? So, Simon quoted Rav Aaron Feldman's son on the mezuzah, and he says that let's add one point. According to the Chamudei Daniel, something that's very important, if you have a walk-in closet, since the nature of a walk-in closet is to walk in there and use it as it is, even though it's not 4x4, but that's how it's used. So according to Chamuli Daniel, a walk-in closet would require a mezuzah. So do we pass it like this? So Rav Aaron Feldman's son in the Sefer Mezuzah said it's a split sock. When it comes to anterooms and hallways that are less than 4x4, but that's how they are used. So then we are machmir for the Chamuli Daniel to, yes, require a mezuzah in that small area. But by closets, the minhag is not to be machmir for the Chamuli Daniel. And even if it's a walk-in closet, we will not need a mezuzah. That's the end of the Chamuli Daniel. Next section is Rabbi Kaveh Eger, section number 3 in mezuzah. Rabbi Kaveh Eger also talking about the size of rooms. He says, let's imagine you have a room, a bedroom with a nice walk-in closet. And the walk-in closet is small, and therefore it doesn't need a mezuzah. But wait a second. When you're going into the closet, it doesn't need a mezuzah, because the closet is less than 4x4. But when you're walking from the closet, you pick out your shirt and your shoes, and then you walk back into your room. Well, your room, you're going from the closet into a room that is 4x4, into a room that's large. And therefore, Rabbi Kaveh Eger would say that you would need a mezuzah going from the closet into the room. And there are a number of poskim who abide by this. Rabbi Simon doesn't like this. Certainly not this pshat. There are a number of pshat in Rabbi Kaveh Eger. Rabbi Simon doesn't accept this because he says, wait a second. We know that the fundamental yesod that we learn from the pasuk is beischa derech bi'ascha. You have to put the mezuzah on the right side of the way you enter. That means there's a way to enter, and there's a way to exit. If we say that every room that has a small room, if you go one way, then you're going into the closet. But if you go the other way, you're going from the closet into the room. What do you mean? The Torah says there's a bia, there's a way of entering, which means there's a way of exiting. That means we don't say every door has a bia one way and a bia going out the other way. No, there's a bia or a yitzia. And therefore, when I have if a person is going from the closet into the house, that's not a new way to come. He's just going through the exit, not through an entrance. Backtracking is not a bia, it's just a yitzia. And that's why Rabbi Simon is not like the Rabbi Kaveh Eger. And therefore, if you'd ask Rabbi Simon, he would say both of these, the Chamuli Daniel and Rabbi Kaveh Eger, are both chumras. He'd prefer being machmir for the Chamuli Daniel and not for the, or more for the Chamuli Daniel than Rabbi Kaveh Eger. Just a few random halachos about mezuzah. There's the next section, section 4, some random halachos about mezuzah. First of all, there's never a havamina that we're going to put a mezuzah on two sides of the door. That's not even a possibility. If you put two mezuzahs on one door post, that would be a violation of Al-Tosif. Shitas HaRambam, very important, not because of the Pesach, but because it's a tziruf, is that if you have a doorway without a delis, as I guess every house, certainly Washington Heights apartments, has, then the Rambam holds there's no chiyuv of a mezuzah. We are machmir, of course, not like the Rambam, to yes put up a mezuzah, even if there is just a doorway without the door, but to be machmir in quotation marks for the Rambam, the Shach tells us not to make a bracha whenever you post a mezuzah where there is no door. Additionally, random halacha, if you put the mezuzah on the wrong side, you're not yotzei at all. If you put a mezuzah too high on the door post, which is within a tefach of the lintel, you're also not yotzei at all. If you put it too low, in the bottom two-thirds of the height of the doorpost, then you're also not yotzei. Rather, the mezuzah has to be in the top third, but beneath the top tefach. Let's talk about the fifth section in Hilchos Mezuzah. And that is, what types of rooms or types of locations are mechuyav in mezuzah? So, the Rishonim have a machlokas regarding a storage area, a beis ha'otzar. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir, but the Rambam is mekel. So presumably, we would not make a bracha when we would put up a mezuzah on a storage area, to be machmir again, meaning to take into consideration the Rambam's leniency, so we're not going to make a bracha. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky fine-tunes this throws a caveat that which we say that a storage is chayav is only if it's part of your dira. So, of course, if you go to this Manhattan mini storage where you have a storage room, there no one would, even the Shulchan Aruch, would not require you to have a mezuzah. Only if it's part of your dira, for example, a garage, even a disattached garage, one might put a mezuzah, would put a mezuzah, but, of course, without a bracha. That's what Yaakov Kamenetsky says, that if it's the only storage that's part of your dira, but a self-storage room is not. The Shulchan Aruch talks about a shul, and says that a shul is pater. However, when the Shulchan Aruch talks about a beis medrash, he brings a machlokas, whether it's chayev or not. What's the reason? Why would we say that a shul is pater and a beis medrash is chayev? Or at least the machlokas, why would somebody say that a beis medrash is chayev if a shul is pater? Well, very simply because, like we all know, we live in another beis medrash, right? We sleep there, we eat there, we do our email there, we do everything, we do, especially for us. We live in the beis medrash, and therefore it is a makom dira. And so halacha lemaisa, if there's machlokas or we're machmir, we do put up a mezuzah in a beis medrash, but without a bracha. Last point in this section, what about an office building? So the Shulchan Aruch says that a chanus is potter. And the understanding is because it's a diras arai, you don't live there, you're just there at daytimes. The problem is that Pesach Teshuva cites a shita that's only, when we say chanus, we don't mean a chanus, meaning the place where you spend, you're 40 years at the firm, you're there 12 hours a day for 40 years. That might be, unfortunately, your diras keva more than your house and wherever the burbs is. But this heter of chanus, this kula of chanus, is only by a makeshift market, store in the market, a makeshift place, but not a permanent store. So therefore, we are, noheg to, yes, have a mezuzah on a workplace, but without a bracha. That's the end of the different kind of locations. The last section in the discussion of the mezuzah is how do we deal with the iser of asur l'shamesh mitaso b'fnei kisvei hakodesh. So, if the way the door is positioned, that the mezuzah is on the outside of the doorway, so the door can close, and the mezuzah is outside, so there's no tashmish shamita in the presence of the mezuzah. What happens if the way the door is situated is that the mezuzah is on the interior of the door, inside the bedroom? So there are four shitas. We'll deal with them from the most kal to the most chamer. The Aruch HaShulchan says, sort of like Darshin in time with the Krah, almost, not really, but the Torah told us to put a mezuzah on our houses. And the Torah realizes that that's what happened, that houses are used for the marriage. And therefore, if the Torah told us to put a mezuzah, and yet the Torah knows that there's a married couple in the house, so obviously there's no, this halacha of in asur l'shamesh mitaso b'fnei kisvei hakodesh doesn't apply at all, even in the first place, to mezuzah. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav has a different kula. Yes, of course it applies essentially, but whenever something is attached to the wall, it's considered a reshus b'fnei atzmo. I don't know how the lumdus there works, why that should be, but therefore it's not in the same room as where the beds are, and therefore it's reshus b'fnei atzmo, it will be able to be there, kisvei hakodesh will be able to stay there without having a problem of it being b'fnei anything else. A little bit more chamer is the chayadam. Chayadam says, we know that the halacha is that when you have kisvei hakodesh, if you have a double wrapping, that allows it to be brought to the bathroom, to be in a place with a tashma shamita, etc. The problem is that one of those two wrappings cannot be miyuchad for a mezuzah. So if you buy a mezuzah case, that's probably miyuchad for a mezuzah. So the eitza is that when you wrap the mezuzah first in the plastic wrap that usually they are wrapped with, you should have in mind that this is not to serve the mezuzah, this is to serve as a hefsek. And if it's there to serve as a hefsek, you're not being miyachad to serve the mezuzah, but rather to serve as a hefsek. So you have one of them which is not serving the mezuzah, plus the mezuzah case which serves the mezuzah, but nevertheless, it's a second kisui, it will be mutter. And the most chamer opinion is that of a stipler, is that every mezuzah should have a little nail or hook on top of it, and you hook a little asher or a sa'at, whatever it is that you're going to hook in the nail or the hook on top of the mezuzah to cover over the mezuzah when it needs to be covered. That's the end of the halachas of Chol HaMoed. Of mezuzah, now we'll talk about Chol HaMoed. I don't remember if Rabbi Sarn was machriya.
I think
being halachic mechitza as a status of it's not a mechitza because it's not asar tefachim high, it's not dalad al dalad, so it might not be a mechitza, it might be a hesed. I hear your question. I don't know the answer. Okay, let's talk about Chol HaMoed. First of all, I spoke in shul right before Pesach, and I wanted to just sensitize people to Chol HaMoed because I think it's one of the weaknesses of our community. And I figured to say that you can't go to work wouldn't be the wisest way to present it to our community. So I just quoted Rashi on Hamavaze Es Hamados. Rashi says that you have to be talking about Chol HaMoed, and you have to know Higbaham Minon Chol. Rashi says, regarding Chol HaMoed, well, you shouldn't do malacha, I didn't say that, but you should be knowing b'ham minhag, if you're knowing b'ham minhag chol, b'achila shtiyah, that's not good. So I suggest that everyone should wear a little bit nicer what you wear on a regular Sunday afternoon when you're not at work, and you should have good food, you should have good meals on Chol HaMoed, so that you won't violate chas shol mevazeh hamodos. Okay, let's talk about malacha on Chol HaMoed. So, point number one is that malacha, the isur malacha bichlal on Chol HaMoed, seems to be a machlokas rishonim. We're not going to get into the rayas, but since we know that there are a lot of chilukim, davar ha'aved, zorech, and all kinds of other, Tosis points out, how could you have all of these distinctions if it's an isur daraisa? Davar ha'aved, to save money, if it's asur daraisa, saving money never plays a role. And also, Tosis brings a Yerushalmi that the whole reason why Malacha is Aser is because the point of the day is Lechol Vilomo Torah. That also sounds like, you know, really it's Mutter, but Chazal put it in place so that there will be a certain character of the day preserved. So, that's the Shita that it's that is the Rabbanon. The most fascinating shita is the chinuch, who says that yes, it is midoraisa. Oh, but how come there are these distinctions that would indicate that they're probably only derabbanon? Because masan hakasev lachachamim, that chachamim just identify what the Torah intended to aser, but once something is aser, it has the clout of an iser midoraisa. Let's flip off malacha per se in the classical sense and talk about tircha. Tircha, the Gemara says clearly, is asr on Chol HaMoed, and therefore if I wanted to move my furniture all day, that would be asr, even though there's no malacha. And the understanding that of this will make a lot of sense if we understand that the reason, certainly if it's derabbanan, the reason why Chazal asrd the different malachos, or aser doing certain actions bichlal, is not a function of doing this mice or that mice, but wanting again to preserve a certain nature of the day, a certain quality of the day, a day dedicated to Torah, avoda, simcha, enjoyment, and therefore tircha would be aser, even if there's no malacha per se. Of course, some major nafkamina, whether malacha will be daraisa, drabana, is whether or not you put on tefillin. If malacha is daraisa, so there's a patur on tefillin. If malacha is only asur derabanan, then there's no os of not having malacha of the mikra kodesh, and therefore there would be a chiyuv of tefillin. Secondly, if something's a safek, of course, safek derabaisa lechumra, derabanan lahakel. Lemaisa, the Mishnah Brura says, mikra hadin, malacha, passing malacha is only midrabanan. However, we're machmir for those who say that it is min ha-Torah. Despite the fact that we do avoid malacha, things like mukza and gzeros derabanan do not apply on Chol HaMoed. There is one cute vort that he said over that Rabbi Adler said from the Emek HaBracha. What about the situation of a malacha that doesn't have any tircha to it. Like flicking on a light. On one hand, it's a melacha, so you can say it's aser. Again, if it's letzorach hamoed, then it will be mutter, as we'll talk about in 5 minutes. But if it's not letzorach hamoed, you're going to say it's aser just to flick on a light, because it's a din melacha, like on Shabbos. So the Emek Habra, we have discussion, we show numerous cases in the Shulchan Aruch that some things are mutter. For example, Ashvuye Gumos, which is a melacha, the Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter because there's no tircha. What do you mean? But I'm not allowed to draw a letter in a Sefer Torah, which takes just a slight movement of my wrist. That's aser. So how come Ashvuye Gumos, which I'm digging and sweeping and pushing dirt, that's going to be mutter? So the Emek Bracha has a beautiful chiluk. He says that you have to look at the melacha be'etzim, at the av. This av melacha is a melacha that is one that's a tircha dika melacha, or it's not a tircha dika melacha. Ksiva, kotzer, those are essentially melachas of tircha, and therefore, even if you do a small part of it, it's going to be aser. But flicking on a switch or striking a match, again, I don't know how you make this gap. That's not a hard thing to do. That's not a tircha dika melacha. You just take the flintstone or however they made fire, you take the whatever they did to catch something to something else. That's not a tircha dika melacha, and therefore it's mutter. It's just a cute word from the Emek Bracha. Ashvuye gomas is bona, or it's choresh, choresh, choresh. Right, you say choresh. Yeah, I hear that. Ayin shana. Yeah, I don't know. The gather is it's an interesting gather. It's very unusual, but it's the idea is a very cute idea. That's the end of that section. Third section in Hilchos Chol HaMoed is the categories for what is permitted. Again, if you're starting off with that everything is aser, where are you yes permitted to do malacha? So we have a list. First of all, davar ha'aved. Second of all, tzorech hamoed. Third of all, ein lo maleachol, which is going to be mutter not only for the hiree, the employee, but also for the employer to give work to his poor employee. And fourthly, tzorech rabim. Yes. Davar ha'aved, tzorech hamoed, ein lo maleachol, and finally, tzorech rabim. Now let's talk about tzorech hamoed because that's probably the one that comes up. That's what we live with all day and all night. That's tzorech hamoed. Now there's some more exceptions. It happens in, you know, here or there, but in general, whenever we do malacha, it's usually because it's tzorech hamoed. So here, there's a very fundamental distinction between whether it is a ma'isa uman or not a ma'isa uman. If it's for ochel nefesh, then you're even allowed to do a ma'isa uman. So if one of my students married a woman who was at culinary school with an expertise in pastry. Don't you wish you got a kind of like that? A life full of delectable... Okay, so even though she's a highly trained professional and knows how to bake and decorate cakes like the fanciest that you might see at a, you know, fancy state affair, so it's ma'aseh uman, isn't it? But since it's for ochel nefesh, she could do whatever malacha she needs in that for that letzorech hamoed because the ochel nefesh heter allows even ma'aseh uman. But if it's just stam tzorech hamoed, then only a ma'aseh hedit will be permitted, not a ma'aseh uman. And therefore, for example, changing your flat tire, that is definitely tzorech hamoed if you're on your way to Hershey Park. But so therefore, it's a tzorech hamoed. Let's assume it's a ma'aseh hedit, I hope. It's getting further away from that. It's not a ma'aseh uman, it will be mutter. But if you want to, let's say, change your spark plugs or adjust your transmission inside the engine, so there, even though it's the same tzorech hamoed to get to Hershey Park, since there it is ma'aseh uman, that will be prohibited. Halacha l'maaseh, the most important application, I think, is when it comes to using a printer on Chol HaMoed. Here we're concerned, even though everybody could just send your document to print, however, the result is, it looks very professional, right? You don't have to, I mean, with my markings, you have something that looks neat, it looks laser printed with a title and a line and bold and highlightings and all the things. It just looks, everything looks finished and beautifully done when we, just by sending something to print. So therefore, it might be, even though the act wasn't a ma'aseh uman, but it has the net result of looking like a ma'aseh uman's results, perhaps one could avoid printing even if it would be the tzorech hamoed. The question that we have to now discuss. What?
You said it was my pleasure, so
That could be. That could be. If something, if there is a result, that's the, if the result is a ma'aseh uman, but the act is not a ma'aseh uman, that was a machlokas.
Okay.
Yaakov Kamenetsky. The next point that we have to just ask along these lines is when we say that for ochel nefesh, you're allowed to do even a ma'aseh uman, does that mean only for food or other things beyond food, but they still relate to the goof? So for example, a woman is allowed to put on makeup even if it's even if she's a professional. Is the word cosmetologist? Cosmetician, I think, is the word. Cosmetician. So even if she's a professional cosmetics lady, she would be permitted, because that's what Rambam says, like ochel nefesh, meaning it's not just eating food, it's also anything that relates to the body, and therefore, if a lock broke and you couldn't get into your house, oh, you need a professional locksmith. Or if you try to break and you have to have professional training, so there it will, or if your toilet breaks, you might, and it's not just a matter of plunging, it's a matter of doing something else, it might be ma'aseh uman, but since these are things that relate to our fundamental needs, our fundamental existence as people, that will be an extension of ochel nefesh, and that will be permitted even if it's a ma'aseh uman. This rears its head in the following question. What about going to the dentist, to the doctor, having your glasses fixed? So since if you're in pain, your glasses are broken, everyone would agree that even though they're umanim, to fix the glasses, and the dentist and the doctor certainly are umanim. Nevertheless, it's an extent, since there's a physical need for those things, so again, when there is pain, then it will be an extension of the ochel nefesh heter, and ma'ase uman will be permitted.
This is where the doctor or dentist is Jewish? Or
let's assume, I don't know the answer. I'm not sure. If, for example, the person does not have any pain and just wants to go for a dental checkup or a doctor's checkup, so that was a little bit more of a discussion, a machlokas among the poskim. Next point that we'll discuss is the parameters of a davar ha'aved. So if a davar ha'aved, chazal, if we assume that chazal, whether or not we assume it's deraisa, but the isur malacha is deraisa, or midrabanan, it's still certainly Chazal who set up the parameters. It just might turn into a deraisa. When they set up the parameter of davar ha'aved, it was for a hefsed harbe. So if there's a hefsed harbe, then davar ha'aved will be permitted if there are two conditions. First of all, that it can't be an excessive tircha. And secondly, you're not allowed to be mechavin malach to lemoed. You can't say, oh, I'm off for a week, you know, Pesach time, I'll just wait to schedule my whatever the davar ha'aved that has to be taken care of, then no. If it happens on Yontif, you couldn't help it, then if there's a hefsed involved, and it's not too much tircha, it will be permitted. Of course, we have to know the Nimuka Yosef's limitation of davar ha'aved, then it's only a loss of keren, a loss of principle, but not a heter for menias revach. I can't, you know, if I want to get a new client, I want to, you know, make a certain sale to get my commission, that will not be considered davar ha'aved, even though I won't make that commission. It could be if you've been working on a client for a long time, and you know Pesach week is the week when a deal, you're going to convince him to go through the deal or not, or you're a real estate broker and you've been working for 2-3 months showing somebody a house and it looks like they're just about to, you know, go for the house and you want to help go to work to, you know, make the deal go through. There's definitely a davar ha'aved, even though it's a commission and it's a, you're going to get a percentage of this revach. You can get this revach, but still, there's a davar ha'aved on all the work that you did before. That might be mutter. Of course, even though we said for the heter of tzorach ha'moed, ma'ase uman was prohibited, for davar ha'aved, we will permit even a ma'ase uman. The application when it comes to business, in terms of davar ha'aved, is let's say you have a client or a customer that's been coming to you for the past few months or years. If you're just going to close your store for 8 days here and there, and they're not going to be able to know you as a reliable supplier, so they're not, you're going to lose them as a customer. So in that case, it will be permitted for you to keep your store open. This is the heter for stores to keep open on Chol HaMoed because they are scared they're going to lose the customer base that they've built up. The last point in Hilchos Chol HaMoed is the parameters of Tzorchei Rabim, which is just a fabulous svara that the Ravid gives, why it's mutter. The Ravid says, if you don't deal with the tzorach rabim, if you don't take care of it, who's going to do it? What happens when everybody has to do something? There's something that has to be done by everybody. Nobody does it. Nobody does it. So therefore, if you don't do it now, when's the best time to do it? When people are off and they have time. So that's the time that you could say, okay, let's do it, because if we don't do it, no one else is. It's not like it's tzorech hayachid that if you have to get it done, you'll get it done. No, the shul has the problem, not me. So therefore, when people are off, that's the best time to do it. However, that's the svara for the heter. The Rama has a tremendous chumrah and limitation that limits this heter of tzorchei rabim only to those needs that relate to tzorchei haguf. For example, we want to make sure that nobody slips in the shul, so we have to fix the floor, the bump on the floor, or there's a problem with the mikvah, so we have to be matir an isha lebaila. So those things relate to tzorchei haguf, for that we will permit tzorchei rabim to fix the shul's HVAC system. But in terms of just building a shul, that's not a tzorech haguf. It's wonderful for communities to have shuls, but that's not a tzorech haguf right now, and therefore there will not be a heter of tzorechei rabim. Those are discussions of Chol HaMoed.
Who was that last year?
Rama. That's Rama's limitation. Let's discuss Yichud. We started just in the Machshava. I just think it's so important. The Gra says, as far as Machshava goes, that if you think about these three things, inata balide avera, the Gra is medayik, but once you are balide avera, thinking all you want to be miskaber, all you want will not help. The geder gadol for avoiding avera is not to be balide avera. So that's the point of Yichud, not so that once a person's in the Yichud and emotions are strong, it's very hard to be misgaber. So Chazal realized that, and therefore you don't get yourself into that situation. Let's start. First of all, Yichud is midaraisa, learned out from a pasuk, the Pashtus. That Yichud midaraisa is only with an erva, and Tosos limits it only to apply in a case of one man and one woman. Whenever you're going to have more than one man and one woman present, it will never be Yichud Midaraisa. Historically, there were two more takanos after that, as far as Yichud. The story of Amnon and Tamar, where Amnon pretended he was sick, so Tamar, because he wanted to take advantage of his half-sister, stepsister, whatever you want to call it, Tamar, and he eventually raped her. So at that point, Malchus, the Beis Din of David HaMelech, was Gozer, that even Yichud of a Penuya will be Aser Midrabanan, Penuya Tahora. Once she's a Nida, although there's a discussion in the postgame whether a Nida, Penuya Nida, meaning most women that you go out with on dates, if that's an Erva or not, we assume Lahachmir that they are an Erva, and that will be Yichud Mida Oraisa, because they're an Erva. But if it's Penuya Tahora, then it will be only Aser Midrabanan. The third stage historically is in the Mishnah, Talmidei Hillel v'Shammai Gozru al Yichud shel im Goya. That's the third stage. Let's talk about the ages. Whom is obligated, or whom is within the Takana. So, of course, the parameter here is that the person has to be Roi Labia, therefore only a boy who's above the age of 9 and only a girl who's above the age of 3 will be Aser to have Yichud with for a bar or bas mitzvah. And therefore, if you have, we give a few interesting examples. Well, first of all, just the classical din. If you want to babysit your 4-year-old niece, that will be aser the Yichud. That's very common if you have an older brother or sister who have kids already. So we pointed out that it's only an iser if the people involved are bar chiyuvas, or one of them are. If you have a below bar mitzvah boy and a below bar mitzvah bas mitzvah girl, you have a 12-year-old boy, an 11-year-old girl, there is no Isser Yichud. Additionally, because we only care about Bar Chiyuvas, if you have a non-Jewish woman babysitter and a 12-year-old boy, well, the 12-year-old boy is not doing anything. He's not Mechuyev and Mitzos. The Gentile woman, I don't know if she has the halachas of Yichud, and therefore will also be Mutter. On the other, in terms of old age, we saw that if a man is elderly, is sick, could he have a Jewish nurse come in and treat him, a Jewish physical therapist, occupational therapist, social worker. So if he physically is impotent and unable to be niskasha for bia, So then Ramosha is mechalik as follows, that if it's clinically, he's defined as clinically impotent by the physicians, so then there's no Isra Yichud period. If he knows he can't, but Lamaisa, there was never a clinical diagnosis of being impotent, then Ramosha was makel for a Pnuya Tahora, which is only Asa Drabanan, and you pointed out somebody in Shir that even for a Goya, it should be Mutter, because that's also only an Isra Drabanan. But Yichud Daraisa, Ramosha would prefer waiting until he has a clinical diagnosis of being impotent. The next section is how long is Yichud, and that we learn out from the Yichud by Sota. Sota has Kinoi v'Stira, Stira means Yichud, and by Sota, the Gemara in Sota says explicitly, Kamashir Stira, it says, after a long discussion, K'dei litzlos beitza uligoma, to cook a small egg and swallow it, and we have a variant shiurim from 35 seconds, which is the most chamer, a minute and a half. Then Rav Moshe Feinstein comes up with a very logical and very lenient addition that you have to add to the time of the bee itself, the amount of time that it takes to get undressed, get back dressed again as you were before, and if it's somebody who you don't know or you don't know well, the amount of time that you also need to be mefata her. So that once you get into that, those numbers, you're already talking about 5 minutes, and if somebody you don't really know, it could be, 20 minutes. But that, when we talk about the shir for Yichud, it's a little bit of a misnomer, because Yichud is asur for a second. If it's a situation where the door will be closed for a minute and a half, or 20 minutes, whatever it will be, then it's asur to be in Yichud for a moment. If, however, the whole situation will not be there for a minute and a half, like you're in an elevator, so then you're permitted to be in that situation entirely. So, for example, if my babysitter is home and I don't realize that, or my cleaning lady is home and I don't realize that, I walk inside, I close the door behind me, and I lock the door, and then I discover that, she's, let's say, cleaning in the kitchen, or she's putting the baby to sleep in the child's bedroom. It's not pshat that, I have 35 seconds till I have to unlock the door. That's a situation of yichud, as things are right now. You're locked in a room with a woman. And therefore, it'll be usher immediately. It happens to be that if the door opens every 30 seconds or something like that, or somebody's coming home within 30 seconds, that'll be mutter. But if the situation as is yichud, that will be there for the shir of yichud, then it's usher even for a moment. It's not a section, just one point to keep in mind. Sister is Asur B'Kvius, whatever that means, if it means for a month, or if it means you're moving into your sister's apartment because you don't know what you want to do with your life, if you want to go back for a master's, or go for get a job, or sit and learn, and therefore you're just going to move into her apartment until you figure things out, that might be Asur. The next section that we'll talk about is a little more technical, and that's numbers. We'll divide it in two halves. First of all, if you have one woman, how many men is it? Of course, a one woman cannot be with one man. Can one woman be with two men? So the Mishnah says explicitly, yes, a woman can be with two men. There are two limitations. First of all, those two men must be ksherim. They have to be religious people. If it's two non-religious people, then a woman cannot be with two non-religious men. And we talked about the parameters of a parrot, so we're not going to go into that right now. Also, the heter of this one woman being with two men is only ba'ir during the daytime. But if it's baderech, so then the Gemara says we're worried that one of the men might have to go to the bathroom and he'll be left with one man, one woman. And so to the Rishonim apply it ba'layla. Let's say you have two men there, one falls asleep, so you'll be left again with one man, one woman, and that will be usher. We get into a little bit of a bind because the Rambam, the Sfaradim, certainly says that everybody, Bizman Hazeh, unless you're a great tzaddik, Yisod Olam, has a din of a parutz, and therefore any two people, even if you're very religious, is not considered a kasher, and therefore, according to the Rambam, there is no heter ever for one woman to be with two men, unless those two men are the greatest tzaddikei hadar, of which we don't have many in our midst. when will it, yes, be permitted according to the Rambam for a woman to be with men? If there are numerous men and numerous women. Harbe, what's called Nashim Harbe im Anashim Harbe. And this will be mutter even if they are prutzim, which according to the Rambam is everybody. So when will you have this heter for Sfardim, for example, or if even for Ashkenazim, if the men are prutzim? So there are three opinions. You don't have to know the names, but either two men, two women are sufficient. That's the most kal. On the other side of the spectrum, the most common is that you need three men and three women in order to be mutter. Then in the middle, there are those who are makel if it's two men and three women. Halacha l'maisa, we should aim for the gold, and therefore we should try to have three men and three women if they're not religious. If we're dealing with prutzim, or if you're Sephardi. Or if it's a malkum sarach, one can be makel on that middle shita, that if it's two men, again, two non-religious men and three women, that would also be permitted. In terms of the limitation that we mentioned earlier, that there's a heter for a woman to be with two men, we said that that limitation, baderach needs an extra person because somebody might go off to the bathroom, and balayli need an extra person because somebody might go to sleep. Well, what's laila? We said that laila, the poskim say, is not defined by any objective standard. Rather, laila is defined by when these people in this apartment or this at this party or this group of friends, when these people are going to sleep, when they normally go to sleep. Or if we saw a tremendous cool, that if, let's say, somebody's visiting my apartment and is going to be going home, so even if it's 3 in the morning, if I have a friend, a male friend who's visiting my apartment, and he plans on going home, so it's not Lila for him yet. Even though it's 3 in the morning, it's not Lila for him because he still has to go home. And I'm always up till 3. So therefore, it will still be considered a day, and there will still be a heter of one woman with two men. Halach l'maisa, of course, if you're driving, you know, if you're driving on the road, on a highway, to going to Munster, to Baltimore, to the mountains, or something, and here you'll need three people in the car plus the woman. So if a woman wants to get a ride from camp in a car where there's a man in the car, there'll have to be at least three men in the car. That was talking about what happens if there's one woman. Now let's talk about the next section. This is the sixth section of Hilchas Yichud. What happens if there are two women? Could you have two women with one man? Here the Mishnah says clearly that it's aser, because that one man might be mefata and nashim dayot and kalos. And we have a discussion, what about if there are three women? If you have one man with three women, will that, could that end up in something bad? Or nothing bad will happen in such a case? There are too many women there, and therefore, it won't. If nothing bad could happen, then it won't be yichud for any of them. What does it mean that nothing bad could happen? So there are three opinions. Rashi says that even though a man might be able to be bol a woman, and then soon thereafter bol another woman, it is physically impossible for a man to be bol three women. So therefore, one of them definitely is not going to be involved in an act, and if he's not, if one of them won't be involved in the act, then she's not party to the other's activities, so everybody else will be embarrassed in front of her. So therefore Rashi says it's going to be three people will be mutter, and this is the Ramah. The Ramah does cite this kula. Again, Sfaradim don't have this kula, but the Ramah does bring this kula that if there are three women, one man can be the yichud with three women. Balayla, you'll need a fourth. And Badech, you'll need a fourth. Correct. Thank you. If there's one man, and if a guy's driving from camp, and there are a bunch of girls who need a ride back from camp, so even though normally during the daytime, if it's whatever, during the daytime, since it's either Badech or Balayla, either way, if you're coming from camp, you're going to need four women.
Well, on a highway, it's not really Badech, because as long as there are other cars there, you're in a public place.
No, the concern with Derek is that one of them might go to the bathroom. So what happens if you have to go to the bathroom and you're on the highway? You pull over and you step aside and you go into the bushes and you go to the bathroom.
That's not...
No, you're right that we're not machmir for Moshe in terms of Moshe holding that any highway you could drive off somewhere to a secluded place. We're not machmir for that chumra of Moshe. But this is what baderech is. Baderech means you can drive, you're in a wagon. What happens if one somebody has to go to the bathroom? The wagon stops. One guy walks into the forest, and how many people are left? So you're left with only one. If there were three people, three women to start with, you're now left with one went to the bathroom. You're now left with one woman and two men, and that's yichud, as the Mishnah says, it's yichud.
As long as you're still on the road, then you're still on a public place. It's not yichud. It's not the same.
Oh, thing. You're saying that I hear what you're saying. If it's on a highway, yeah, that's a good point. Two other reasons why three women might be mutter. Rashi said because it's physically impossible for one man to be Boel, three women, one after the other. The Ritva says that he's scared that if there are three women there, that one of them will talk about what happened. If they are, you know, you can keep a secret with one, you can keep a secret with another woman, but to keep a secret with three women there, that's not going to happen, says the Ritva. And the Rashba, a little bit of a twist, he says, if there's so many women there, he's going to be embarrassed, or I don't know if it's that he'll be embarrassed, or some of the people will be embarrassed because there are just so many, you know, she has two friends there, so she'll be embarrassed. This heter of one man with three women, which is the kula for of the Ramah for us, is even if the women are prutzos, even if they're goyos, it will still be permitted, and therefore, halacha maisa, if you have three nieces, even though you can't babysit your niece, if you have one niece, or two nieces, but if you have three nieces, you can babysit them. The limitation to this heter called Nashim Harbe is if it's Asakavim Hanashim, which means your profession is based on working with women. Rebbe Yashiv limits this only if your profession is exclusively with women. Meaning it's not like you say you're a salesman in Macy's and sometimes you do women's clothing, sometimes you do men's clothing. No, if you're only a salesman in the women's clothing department, then you're Asakavim Hanashim. If you're a doctor in the ER, and sometimes you treat women, sometimes you treat men, that's not Asakavim Hanashim. But if you're an OBGYN doctor, that's Asakavim Hanashim, then you will not have the heter of three women. Finally, the last section of Hilchas Yichud is the parameters of Pesach, Pesach, Rishis HaRabim. Basically, it's important to know that there's a gigantic, gigantic, raging machlokas whether the door has to be ajar to permit Pesach Pasuach, or just has to be, it can be closed, but it needs to be unlocked. It seems that there are a number of Rishonim, and I think this Mikra Din is what somebody can be make on. As long as the door is unlocked, you can have Yichud, even one man, one woman. However, this leniency that allows the door to be closed, as long as it's unlocked, also comes with a chumrah. If you assume that the door is closed, so what's the heter? Somebody might come in. When is somebody going to come in? Only during daytime hours, or as long as people are walking by. And therefore, after the normal times that people are walking by, there's not going to be this heter. However, if you held like the other Rishonim who are machmir, said the door needs to be ajar, Pesach Pasuach means the door has to be actually ajar, there has to be an ability to peek in and just stick your head inside the opening and see what's happening inside, well, that's chumrah, because you have to open the door. On the other hand, that gives you a kula, because any time of the day or night, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that cool, if the door is open, no one's going to do anything inside, ever. You always get somebody will stick their head in and peek in. And therefore, the chumrah opinion that says the door needs to be ajar also has his kula, that the heter Pesach Pasuach will apply even in the middle of the night. We added another important kula, two important kulas. Even the Rashba says clearly that even if you don't expect anyone to open the door, still, since the door can open, somebody can come in, there's an ema of the rabbim, and therefore, emas rabbim olav b'teva, that's the lashon of the Radvaz, I think, and therefore you can have the door unlocked, even though you don't expect somebody specific to come in. Additionally, the Radvaz has a kula, even if the front door is open and you're behind five more doors, you're in five rooms into the house, in the interior of the house, on the second floor, over there, over there, over there, still, it's going to be mutter based on the Pesach Pasuach, since all those doors can be accessed just by opening, just by turning the knob. an important limitation to this heter of Pesach Pesach is gaspa. Gaspa is somebody that you're very friendly with, somebody you grew up with, let's say a cousin, a girl you went to elementary school with. Then we will not have the heter of Pesach. But even though the door is unlocked, it won't be okay, which actually reminds me. I was once visiting my cousin, and she opened the door. I came, and she opened the door, and I thought, wow, she's so frum. She opened the door. I'm just her cousin. Now I'm realizing that even opening the door might not work, because she was my cousin. We grew up together. So maybe there's not even a heter of Pesach Pesach. Something to think about. Somebody who's gaspa, things could happen right away. You're very familiar with them. So as long as both agree, there's no time. You know each other. You know each other very well. I don't know if it means that there has to be an intimate relationship. The posts don't say that there needs to be an intimate relationship between the two people. But they know each other so thoroughly that once somebody says something, the other, you know, they say yes or no right away. They know each other well. So there's no heter of Pesach Pesach. Okay, that's all for Yichud. Let's talk about, just for a minute, about getting ready for Pesach. That was Rabbi Brander's shiur. First of all, kitnios, an important kula. If kitnios fall into a tavshil... Oh, yeah, question.
If there are two people who are going to be a field, will be asked for the third person to have a man and a mother and another woman?
A man with his mother and another woman his mother. The mother is Shomeris, the son. That is correct, because those two sisters are Matzil. I don't even know why somebody would be Mikkel.
I'm not sure why the reason is because...
I think it's first not like that, because only Tzaras, if you have two Tzaras, then it's Mutter, because they'll talk about each other, because they hate each other. But if they like each other, I don't think it should be Mutter. I think it would be Mutter. It's only if there is a man and a woman who are related to each other, such that there's no Mitzvah Yichud, then other people could tag along. If it's two sisters, I don't think it would be okay. Similarly, two brothers. If you have two brothers, well, two men anyway might be Mutter. I'll put that aside.
So that's a big
time for us to say both ways. Okay. Thank you. So let's go to Pesach. Kitnios. A little, you know, different kind of sugya. A little bit lighter or heavier, depending on who you are. Kitnios, if they fall into your tavshil, they will not, maybe it's just that I gave the shiur on Yichud, so I was very into it and I was very excited about it. No, yeah. After this is, okay, so kitnios, if they fall into your food, b'dieved, the food is kosher. What's the reason for kinyos? It's a machlokes rishonim, Mishnah Berurah being tambos shitas, either because the kernels got mixed up with kernels of chametz, or secondly, when you make a corn cake, it looks like a flour, you know, a wheat flour cake, and people might come to use wheat flour. The Igros Moshe has an important kula when it comes to, that allows us to eat potato starch cakes, because that, and he says there that even though nowadays we might use other substances to make substitute bread stuffs, like potato starch, nevertheless, we only aser kidneys, those things that were in the initial takana of Chazal, of the Rabbanim, whenever they made that iser in the early Rishonim, basically, and anything that happened later would not be in that ged, and therefore potatoes are going to be okay. Peanuts, even though Ramosha is matzi peanuts, even though I think the minhag is not to go with peanuts. Quinoa, that's all machlokas I'm sure everybody's familiar with and everyone talked about over Pesach. That was the hot topic this year. Even though apparently the OU is a machlokas or Shefter Rebelski, so the OU doesn't allow it, but other kosher organizations say that it don't consider it to be kinyas. Nevertheless, you still have to buy quinoa with a hash, even according to those other agencies that are permitted. It's only permitted if it has a kosher supervision because the quinoa is often processed on manufacturing lines that do process chametz. The next point...
What's the reason for saying that it is kinyan? What's the reason for forbidding it? If it's not included in the original, why?
I guess it's like a legume. I guess they consider it just a legume. I don't think, do we look at a genus? Do we look at species? Do we look at... I don't remember my biology taxonomy, but... We're just considering the parish of legumes like a pea, it's like a rice.
You would say only don't ask for kidney if it's only by things that look like bread, by things that are planted near Chametz fields, so we could add in quinoa as the fields are close together and they're worried about cross-contamination.
Okay. Another very important point for for the parameters of Hilchas Chametz, this is a separate issue, is to realize that not every crumb in the house is chametz only, well, it depends. If it's pachas mikazayas, then it is only going to be mechuyev in bedika if it is roi lachilas adam, I think. If it's gadol, if it's bigger than a kazayas, then it's going to be chayv in bedika if it is, as long as it's still roi lachilas kelev. But if it's not roi lachilas kelev, then even if it's bigger than, I don't remember which was the kazayas, I'm sorry, I'm a little confused about this point, so just be aware that if it's something that's a crumb that's on the floor and stepped on, or a place that people will step on it, it's not even chayiv and bedik at all, even if it is roila kelev. And if it's a little bit bigger, then it has to be invalidated from achilas kelev. So for example, you could spray some toxic spray on it, that would be okay. One point about that shear is the discussion about electric ovens, and of course, if you have an electric stovetop, you have the range top, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4. So those places where the coils are embedded in the glass, so if you turn it on high, that might kasher the coil area itself. But the area between the coils, you can't really kasher it with Lieben because you'll crack it, and you can't, whatever you do will basically mess it up. So the suggestion was made in that shear, a very creative solution to sort of drape a tent around the area with aluminum foil and put to build up the heat, to turn all the coils on and build up the heat inside. And this way you try to create a Lieben, and you know that you got to Lieben if you put paper there that singes. So if you put a paper, aluminum foil, in the area between the four ranges and it gets singed by the heat of the of that area between the ranges, that sort of cross, that T that's between the four ranges, that would be a Lieben. Rav Schechter pointed out that there's the Shulchan Aruch says explicitly that whatever you're dealing with a material that you're worried it might crack, kashering it will not work. Lieben doesn't work on anything. You can't be malabing something. I'm just going to make sure I don't crack it. I'll do Lieben as long as I don't make sure it doesn't crack. Once you worry something might crack, then by definition, Lieben can't work. Here, the whole reason why you're doing this thing is to make sure that nothing cracks, so Lieben will not work at all. That's as far as preparing for Pesach. Shiurim are a little bit too long, so I'm not going to do them right now. I'll do it maybe the next review. Let's just finish off for today. We'll talk about Shechita. And then we'll finish in about 5 minutes, or less. So first of all, when you do Shechita, you have to have bedikas for the sakin, of course, and there are 12 bedikos. Whenever you run the knife in a direction, that's a bedikos. If you run the knife back and forth over your nail, that's already two, and then you run it between your fingers on one side of the knife and the other side of the knife, and there are 6 sets, and each one is back and forth, and ends up being 12. I don't have a Kabbalah in Shechita, so therefore there's only so much that I could... Okay. Next point is a discussion. Let's say you have a... Of course, you can't have a pagam in the knife. That's midaraisa. Let's say the knife does not have any pagam. It's completely straight. It happens to be perfectly blunt. It's not a sharp item. It's very flat and hard, but there are no nicks in this knife. It's not even a knife. It's just the side of a desk or something. So that theoretically is kashrut shechita, right? There's no pagam. Well, here, that would be okay according to the Shulchan Aruch. That's what seems to be the case. However, the Rama says that we're not really sure. We're not bekiyan. I'm not sure what we were not bekiyan in, but the Rama is machmir if it's blunt, and therefore we do make sure that it's not only that there are no nicks and no pagamim, but also that it is a sharp knife. The main thing that we have to know in Hilchas Shechita is that there are 5 halachos that render Shechita to be kasher. The 5 halachos are learned out from the pasuk that says, Kasher tzivisicha by Shechita. Where did Hashem command us? Nowhere. It doesn't say it anywhere in the Torah, so it must be halachu Moshe Mitzrayim regarding these 5 halachos. What are the 5 halachos that everyone should know about? Peh, hint, hint. First of all, Shehiyah. So here we have a discussion of how long the shehiyah has to be, the pause has to be in the shechita to render the shehiyah haposeles, ha-matref, ha-minaveles. And the Shulchan Aruch says, like the Gemara, that it's the amount of time that it takes to lift up the animal, to lower the animal, and to shech the animal, which asks the experts exactly how much that is. Let's assume 20 seconds, 22 seconds. The Ramah, as seems to be the theme, certainly when presented by Rav Ben Chaim and Rav Elkid, is Machmir. And is Machmir and Pasel's a Shechita, even if there was a Mashahu of a pause in the back and forth of the Shechita. The Chumrah of the Ramah is so great that it's not only if there's a Mashahu of time of pause, but even if there's something that was in the throat, even a blade of grass, that theoretically might cause a delay in the, you know, there will not necessarily need to be a delay, even if there's some blade of grass that might cause a delay in the a pause in the Shechita, even that, even if there's some grass in the throat, even that would passel according to the Ramah. So Ramah's Rei Machmir, it happens to be that the Svaranim do were Mekabel this Chumrah, halfway, meaning that if there's a pause, they'll answer, but if there just happened to be grass or something in his throat, it didn't cause a pause. Then even the Svaranim will keep their status quo and permit that.
What's the source for this?
I don't know. Probably an Einanu Bekiyim, which is, I don't remember, you have to look inside, but a number of times the Ramah's Chumrah is based on an Einanu Bekiyim. It could be...
The idea of lifting it up and...
Yeah, how do you calculate it?
I'm not exactly sure if that's really what it is.
Or could, I don't remember if that's the reason, but if it is, then we just don't know. Some people are quicker than others, so when you don't know, so you just avoid
so
it.
So we don't know the amount of time that might be. So
that could be. Again, look in the Ramah. The Ramah is in Chav Gimel Beis, and check to see what he says. I don't know. After the Rov Simon or Mashachta, what happens if you pause there? So the animal's kosher already, isn't it? So, accordingly, the Shulchan Aruch says, the animal's kosher already, there's nothing to, no problems that you could subsequently have, so she is not going to ask you anymore. Nevertheless, even after you pass the Rov, even after you Shechted Rov Simonim, the Rama is nevertheless concerned that there might be a pause until it's completely dead. So if you are shechting and you did Rav Simanim, and then for whatever reason you pause, don't continue your shechita, take your knife away, and you want to kill it quickly or do whatever you want to, clob it on the head, but don't do anything before it's dead after you've already reached the point of two Rav to Simanim. Just like the Ramah has this Chumrah, again, after you shechted Rav Simanim, everything's okay, we're still worried about something before, as long as it hasn't yet been killed. The Ramah is concerned with that, not only as we said by Shia, but also by Hadras, which we'll speak to in a minute, and Agrama, which we'll speak about in 3 minutes. The next of the five halacha l'moshe misinai that are the parameters of Shechita is Hadrasa. Hadrasa means one thing: you can't do a samurai chop going from the top down to do Shechita. Shechita has to be back and forth. Of course, you have to provide downward pressure, otherwise it's not going to go anywhere, but it has to be in a back-and-forth motion, not in a vertical motion coming from the top, pushing down. Of course, this is not one of the five, but it's very important to remember that Bakol Shochetim, the story that hopefully we'll never forget, the very vivid story of in the Six-Day War, Ben Chaim was in wherever he was in the 61, Sinai or Sinai or something or other, and they were just snipping off with scissors the heads of chickens and eating them. And Ben Chaim said, "Why are you eating the phalanx? Just taking your razors that are trafe on your chin and your cheeks, and we'll use it to kasher the, you know, to do a proper shechita with the razor blade. And even if it's not a razor blade, even stone, glass, wood, everything is kasher. Hakol kasher for as a utensil for shechita." Okay, next point. Next to the three. Next to the five is Chalada. Chalada is basically, let's start like this. The reason why the Shochetim knives have that square head, that block head, and not a pointy head like most of our kitchen knives, is to avoid Chalada. We don't want to poke inside. We want to be able to come from the, again, not applying pressure downwards, we want to come from the outside and cut from the outside. We don't want to poke from the side of the neck and get between the simanim in any which way. We don't even want to poke go into the wool or into the skin and then, you know, do our regular shechita. We want to avoid any bit of poking. And it's such a concern that we want our knife to be completely open and not poked and not stuck in anywhere, that even if the makam hashchita was covered over, for example, with a tie, something that's, certainly if something is davuk to the top of the, if I put my knife there and there's something davuk and my knife goes underneath that, let's say there's a band-aid on the neck of the, on the neck of the animal. And I sort of put my knife under the band-aid and then I'm going to do my regular shchita in a crisscross back and forth motion. That will be a problem of this isur chalada, which is that you sort of, the knife is hidden and you might come to poke between the simanim, and even not only if it's a band-aid that's attached, even if it's not davuk, your tie, the tie of the shofet ends up, you also have Elkin doesn't wear a tie as he did a shchita. Well, even though he's wearing his white shirt, he took off, he was nice enough to take off his tie. So even if the tie would be sitting on top of the neck, since the knife would be covered over by that, whatever it is, even though it's not davuk, that will be a problem with chalada again, because the knife is hidden and you might come to poke instead of it being completely open and open to the air and doing a straight cut. The fourth is hagrama, which just means getting the right point on the length of the neck. You can't get too high, you can't get too low, and basically that's not usually a problem, as the Rabbanim points out, if you just put your hand underneath the chin, and cut below that, you'll always get the right spot. And of course, it's not that giraffes, we don't know where to shaft, it's the opposite. They have the least limitation of hagrama, meaning they have the largest area where the knife could be applied. The final of the five, and we'll finish with this, is ikur. Ikur, I think you have to have a better perspective of the shechita experience to get it clearly, but ikur is the following, that before you finish the shechita, we have to make sure that the two simanim, both the trach and the esophagus, are still attached, the muscles are still connected to the wherever they're supposed to be attached, to the lechi, the bus, or whatever it is. And therefore, you have to assure yourselves, right after you do the shechita, you have to check to make sure that the trachea and the esophagus are still attached to where they're supposed to, those muscles and tendons that are holding them in place. How do you check? So what the shoftims do is they say you, right after the shechita, you sort of pull the simani, you pull the trachea and the esophagus. Well, what happens if something is attached and you pull it? You pull it and it'll be pulled right back. It'll recede by those tendons and muscles to which it's attached. And therefore, if it pulls back, you know that they're still attached. If it doesn't pull back, it must mean that there was a rip, a tear, between from the trachea or esophagus to the muscles or tendons that hold them, and that will be a psul of ikur. Finally, not one of the five, but this is a big, important halacha in shechita, is that even after you did all the things properly, you had a good knife, and you did whatever you had to do, you, of course, have to look at the throat and make sure that you did a shechita, that you got rov of shnei simanim. And if not, even if you're Moshe Rabbeinu, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you didn't do a shechita afterwards to ascertain that the robe of the two simanim were taken care of, it is not going to be kosher. Be'ezus Hashem, that will be the end of this section. We'll have another section to discuss the other shiurim. Next, when's Yontif? Yontif is Wednesday, Thursday. You know what? We have a week after Shavuos is the test. So let's meet after Shavuos on that. There won't be Shira anymore. Maybe we'll do on a Monday or Tuesday after Shavuos, which will still be 2-3 days before the test. I think that will be very convenient, you know, for everybody. So I'll send you an email if it will be Monday. Is there any difference after Shira's over between Mondays and Tuesdays?
Mondays is
Yoreh Deh Chubur this time? Okay, so well, let's assume it will be Tuesday after Shavuos, which will be 2 days before the final.
Maybe not. No, never mind.
Okay, so we'll be in touch in terms of Monday or Tuesday. I'll send out. Oh, the corn blue. Could you send me the notes? What? Oh, yeah? Send it to me again, because I'll send it out again, just in case.
You mean you're going to post them? Or?
Yeah.
Okay.